Nuketown Radioactive, number 23, for Monday, December 19th, 2005. Folks, was the theme to Star Trek The Next Generation back when Star Trek didn't suck. Also, when theme songs didn't have lyrics. Those were heady days, folks. Who knew we would sink so low with Enterprise, you know? But that's neither here nor there. I am your host, Ken Newquist. This is Nuketown Radioactive, and it's been a while since Radioactive's been out. I didn't quite realize how long until I went over to the site and was kind of looking and thought, oh my god, I really haven't updated this in a while. I think the last podcast came out somewhere around like December 5th, which is just a little bit longer than I wanted. But you know what? It's been a busy month for a lot of different reasons. Of course, the holidays are upon us, so there's all that kind of preparation going on. I've got a week's vacation coming up between Christmas and New Year, so you know, there's a lot of stuff at work that needs to get done. But it's also even busier for me because it's my birthday. My birthday falls on December 17th, so you know that has a bit more running around associated with it too, you know, having a little birthday party. I mean, obviously it's all fun stuff, but you know, it does detract from my free time that I could be spent doing Radioactive. It was a pretty cool birthday, gotta say. Saturday, it fell on Saturday, so I was able to go and see King Kong with a friend of mine, Bob, which was very cool. You know, it's not often as a geek dad I get to get out and see a nice 3-hour movie, right? But King Kong definitely kicked ass. You know, very kind of, you know the story of King Kong. I mean, what geek doesn't? But so, you know, there were great aspects to the movie. I mean, the whole Lost World thing was awesome. Better in my opinion than really anything you saw in Jurassic Park. But you know, it's also a melancholy movie. It can be a very sad movie, you know, when the end comes around and Kong's ultimate fate befalls him. But, you know, still a great way to spend 3 hours on Saturday on your birthday, you know. On the present front, I got a very cool laptop backpack. It's called a Targus backpack. I guess that's the brand. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, my wife got it for me at Staples, and it is, in a word, freaking awesome. It fits my PowerBook perfectly. It's nicely padded all around, which is very cool. So, you know, it's not, obviously you're never going to want to throw your laptop, but this thing looks as though it should be able to sustain, you know, minor bumps and such, which is really all I want from a laptop bag. And it's got a lot of pockets. You know, one of the things with laptop bags is they usually end up being kind of oversized, and they really are only meant for hauling laptops. But this thing retains the functions that you would want in a backpack, namely lots of pouches, lots of components, compartments, you know, just places to put stuff. You know, I don't want to overload this thing, but it definitely has everything I would be looking for in a backpack, so kudos to Sue for finding the perfect laptop backpack. I also got some money from my in-laws, which was money and Bailey's Irish cream, which is just a great freaking way to relax in the winter, you know? So actually, I'm drinking some right now as part of the podcast, but they gave me some money for my birthday, which was awesome because it allowed me to finally buy some RAM for my old G3 iMac, which is now up and running. I got 512 meg of RAM, which on this machine, you know, with Mac OS X, more RAM is always more better. So it's now up and running with Mac OS X. It's a little slow. I mean, this is a 400 megahertz G3. We're not going to be winning any races with this thing, but it's very functional. It's doing what I need it to do. It's going to be able to play audio files. It's going to be able to play movies. I can store my MP3 collection on it, you know, those kinds of things. And the really cool thing about this laptop, about this G3 iMac, aside from the fact that it's green, is that it has an expanded hard drive. A couple of years ago, its hard drive went bad, and the original like 10 gig one got replaced with a 20 gig one, with an 80 gig one. So it's got a huge freaking hard drive. So I'm thinking I'm probably going to end up using this as my my media computer up in my office, or maybe even in the gaming room. I might use it on Fridays during the game to play, you know, like Lord of the Rings soundtrack and stuff. But anyway, the idea being I could use this instead of my G4 Power Mac to download all of my whatchamacallit. Yeah, you know, I'm just, as always, stumbling over my words, right? Anyway, you know, use it to download my podcasts and audiobooks. You know, why not fill up this hard drive rather than the production computer's hard drive? So that was all very, very cool. The other thing that I've kind of accidentally got busy with was my I have a website for my Dungeons & Dragons campaign called The Griffin's Crier, and it's been around. God, the website probably went up in like 97 or 98, and it's gone through way too many different incarnations. What I'm experimenting with now is actually putting it into a wiki, which is an idea I've been toying with for a couple of months, but only just now got around to playing with it. And the thing about a wiki is, once you actually start playing with it, ooh, is it cool? I mean, the basic idea behind a wiki is that, the software I'm using for the Griff Crier experiment is the same software that they use for Wikipedia. It's called MediaWiki is actually the software involved. And the basic idea behind a wiki is that it's very easy to edit, very easy to update, very easy to track all the changes, easy to have a conversation about those changes. So, I mean, my guys and I, we have a fairly involved Dungeons & Dragons campaign. I mean, this is a lot of world building goes on. A lot of the players contribute to the building of the world, either through building up their own organizations for their PCs, helping me flesh out NPCs, whatever. So the ability to have them log into a site and easily make changes, easily add content, was very attractive. And the other great thing about a wiki is it's so easy to hyperlink things. Basically, you throw in two brackets before a word and two brackets after a word, and boom, it's a hyperlink. And if a page already exists for that, well, it links to that page. And if it doesn't, then if you click on that link, you can automatically start editing a new page. Now, it can get kind of cyclopean in its madness with spawning all these different links and, you know, spelling counts, folks. So you got to make sure, as people who are creating this, that you're actually paying attention to making... You need to make sure that everything's spelled correctly, because otherwise, if you have a misspelled entry, it's going to decide to spawn its own page rather than link to where it really needs to go. So I'm going to be showing the guys how to use it sometime over the next week or two, and hopefully having them play around with it and letting me know if basically it's worth it to do it. Because it's going to be, we have hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of entries up on the Crier, and moving them over to the wiki, while easy, is going to be, it's easy to create the articles, a little harder to create the categories and keep all the categories managed, but it's going to be very time consuming to move all this stuff over, even with all of us working on it. So it's only, you know, it's only something we're going to do if the other guys are actually going to want to do it. Because this is one of those things where, you know, in the olden days, I probably would have just stayed up until midnight. Yeah, who am I kidding? Until 4 in the morning for a week doing it. but those days, for better or for worse, are now far behind me. So, you know, I can get the thing set up. I want to set up the categories. And then hopefully if the guys are into it, they'll be doing all the heavy lifting.
This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, tsfpn.com.
So as far as sites of note this time around, I unfortunately, I have not been able to catch up on my podcasts, and I have not been, more importantly, I have not been able to listen to any new podcasts. I've got a couple in mind that I want to check out, namely Sci-Fi Dig and 2D6, or I think it's called Roll 2D6. I just added them to my PowerBooks iTunes, and I'm hoping to get them fired up and loaded onto the shuffle to listen to this week while I'm walking back and forth to work. But unfortunately, I'm not there yet, right? So for Sites of Note this week, I'm going to have a little fun and kind of cheat a little too, because I actually already talked about these in my Nights at the Dinner Table column, which I think will probably be out in another month or two. But anyway, the sites I want to talk about involve Legos. Now, I've been kind of on a Lego kick. I've been playing around with my Lego robot. I have the Lego Mindstorms from a couple of years ago, and I'm going to have a lot of fun with programming that. There's actually there's a post up on Nuketown about it. But anyway, as I was doing that, I kind of found all these freaking Lego sites that people are using with gaming, which was a really cool concept. At least for me, because I know I used to do all kinds of things with my Legos and build all these kinds of wars and huge battles and stuff. But, you know, I never had any rules for it. But, you know, being 30-something geeks, or, you know, whatever age geeks, they have decided to go ahead and, well, make some rules. So the first one I talk about is Brick Wars, which is like Warhammer, but with Legos and no painting. And it's much less serious. So basically, you're talking about large-scale tabletop wargaming with Legos, and I've downloaded the rules. I've only been able to start. I've read like the first couple of pages, and I've just been browsing through them. But they have all kinds of stuff in here. It's great. You know, they've got it for unit-to-unit combat. They've got like siege weapons. You know, pretty much any free scenario that you'd want to do with Legos, with miniature Lego battles, you could do with Brick Wars. So. You know, if you have a bucket of Legos lying around, and who doesn't, you know, check it out. It's fun, and I'm really looking forward to trying this out with some friends. And that's actually one of the things I'd like to do over Christmas break is sit down, read the rule book, you know, maybe go out and buy some more Legos. I especially need the little guys. You know, I don't have enough of the little guys to really build an army. But it's cool. You know, it'll work because I can play Legos with Jordan when she's a little older, right? And you do a little wargaming with the buddies. The other cool one, which might actually be the easier of the two to do, just in terms of what I actually have on hand, is Brick Quest, which is like Hero Quest, but again, with Legos. So the idea being that you take Legos, you build a dungeon, you have your little Lego guys, and they go adventuring in said Lego dungeon. And actually, because I have the Harry Potter Legos, I'm thinking this might be even cooler. And, you know, my friends and I play a lot of different games, and I think this whole Lego thing strikes me as being just right up our alley, because we all have, like, this slightly twisted sense of humor, and I think that there's just something inherently funny about using Legos to play, like, Warhammer or Hero Quest or whatever. So, you know, I'll have the sites up for these. I'll have the URLs for these up on the site. Let's see. In the show notes. But anyway, Brick Wars is www.brickwars.com. Brick Quest is www.brickquest.com. Very cool sites. I definitely recommend that you check them out.
Thank you.
Well, folks, that is the sound of the Geek Tree powering up. It's also the reason why the Geek Tree ornaments were forced into a mass exodus from the main family Geek Tree a couple years ago. The Geek Tree, and I've talked about the Geek Tree earlier on one of the... I think it might have been the last podcast, but anyway. The Geek Tree is my dedicated Christmas tree with nothing but geek ornaments on it. It is a 7-foot-tall, artificial, pre-lit tree, which I got at Walmart last year. Prior to that, it had been about 5 feet tall. It has Buck Rogers-style racing lights going up and down it, which is, it's like the tube lighting. You've got a plastic tube, and then there's lights inside of it, and you can set them to race, which means that they go really fast in one direction. The Geek Tree presently has 52 speculative fiction ornaments hanging on its boughs. Of these, 20 have lights, 13 have sound. The oldest ornament is the Shuttlecraft Galileo from Star Trek, the original series, from 1992. Unfortunately, they did have one in 91, which was the original Star Trek Enterprise, but unfortunately, my parents didn't start buying them for me until... I guess 92. So I missed out on that classic original one. And there's no way in hell I'm buying it now because the damn thing costs, I think, like $300 or something like that on eBay. It's not cheap. anyway, the newest ornament is Gandalf the Grey from Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, which I just got this past year. Actually, there's probably a few more others than that, but we'll say that that's the most recent one. My favorite ornaments on the Geek Tree are the City on the Edge of Forever, which has Kirk and Spock leaping through the Guardian of Forever, with the Guardian is illuminated in the background, and when you press a little button, it talks, and then the illuminated Guardian just kind of quivers. The other one that's really cool is the Star Destroyer with Blockade Runner, and that was last year's ornament. I think both of those were from last year, but that's a pretty cool ornament in so much as you heard in the audio clip, it runs for a long time, and it's got that great line from the great lines from Star Wars: A New Hope, where 3PO and R2 are reacting to the attack on the Leia's Blockade Runner by the Star Destroyer. So anyway, it's just a cool little ornament. It's got the Star Destroyer, and then it's got the Blockade Runner hanging off the front of it, which is just very cool in a very, very geeky kind of way. So anyway, how did it all come to pass? Well, the old tree, the family tree, had all of my geek ornaments on it, and it was getting to the point where the main tree was starting to look like, well, a geek tree. And you'd plug it in, and it would power up, and all these freaking ornaments would go off, including the Borg cube. We've got good old Darth Vader going. We've got the Emperor demonstrating a fully operational Death Star. And it was one of those things where I wouldn't say that it was ruining Christmas, but it was perhaps diluting the Christmasness of the main tree. So my wife suggested that I create the Geek Tree, which I did, and I got this, I think it was about 5 foot tall, kind of scrawny looking, not quite a Charlie Brown tree, but not really all that impressive and not entirely stable, tree from Walmart. It wasn't pre-lit. It was actually one of the old style artificial trees, so you would have to it had the color coded bases to each of the branches, so you'd have to like put them in order, and like, you know, the pink ones went on the bottom, the brown ones, and then the black ones or whatever. And of course, as is inevitable with these kinds of trees over the years, the paint rubs off, so you know, you spend like an hour trying to figure out which branch is supposed to go where. That tree served me pretty well for a couple of years, but, you know, the thing is that when you've got 50-odd geek ornaments, some of which are not all that light. I, for example, I have Slave One from a couple of years ago, which is a die-cast, die-cast ornament, and I've also got the, Enterprise from the Enterprise series, Star Trek series. These are not light ornaments, and by the time the original Geek Tree reached its end, it could not hold all of the ornaments, and its branches just really were not made to hold the really heavier die-cast ones. So last year I went hunting for a new tree, and I found this great, it's 7 foot tall but narrow, artificial pre-lit tree. Pre-lit with white. The Geek Tree always has white lights on it, because one of the things that I found when you have the Geek Tree, and on the original Geek Tree, I originally had colored lights because I thought it was more of a spacey kind of feel to it. But here's the thing. A lot of my ornaments are powered. When the powered ornaments are plugged into that means that they're plugged, most of the powered ones, you have to actually plug into the string of lights. Well, every time you plug you have to take out a light bulb in order to plug it in. And the first couple of times I did this, I didn't really pay attention to the fact of what bulbs I was taking out, and the first year, well, the Geek Tree looked decidedly pink, because I had taken out all of the non-pink bulbs inadvertently. So what remained was like red, orange, and a whole lot of pink, which just really didn't befit the theme of the Geek Tree. I mean, sure, you got the Matara Nebula from Star Trek II, but that would really work better if the whole tree was pink, and even then, I've never really been a fan of the... Excuse me, I'll have to edit that out. I've never really been a big fan of the multicolored Christmas trees, the spinning Christmas trees, so forth and so on. So anyway, long story short, I decided to go with white lights for the new tree. And the new trees worked out really, really well. I think the other thing that was really problematic with the old tree was that once you take out all these lights, and it's the other reason why I switched to white lights instead of colored lights, is that the tree has a tendency to be very dim. If you use colored lights, you take out those lights and replace it, for the powered ornaments, it really kind of diminishes the tree. It's very subdued. So the pre-lit tree with another strand of white lights thrown on it, and the most important part, the Buck Rogers racing lights, really, it's a really beautiful tree now. It's I get compliments on it from people who are not geeks, because it's actually a very pretty tree. The new ornaments this year include, we have Darth Vader at Bespin, where he's saying, "Luke, I am your father." And I think he also says, "Join me, you know in your heart it's to be true," or whatever. Those are my bad James Earl Jones impressions. I also have the new Enterprise 1701A, which is powered. And it's very, it looks beautiful. I mean, they perfectly captured the 1701A, and you press this little button on it, it powers up, and it's illuminated with a great, the warp nacelles look beautiful, the deflector array is that nice, bright blue. But the only problem with this and the Darth Vader one is they're not powered. They're not powered independently of them. They're not powered by the strings. So, particularly in the case of the Enterprise, it looks beautiful for, the 30 seconds that it's lit after you press the button. What's the point? It's a beautiful ornament that just kind of goes to waste because the damn thing isn't powered. Vader, it's less of an issue. I mean, I kind of love the cacophony of sound as the Geek Tree powers up, and I would have loved that scene from Empire Strikes Back to be added to it. But, I can live without it. And I think what I'm going to end up doing, there's another Star Trek ornament out this year, which is Jean-Luc Picard and the Borg Queen, and apparently that is both illuminated and it's powered, so it's actually, and it's got voice. So I'm thinking that would be the new ornament that would really kind of add to the chaos as the Geek Tree lights up. I also got Gandalf the Grey, which was pretty cool. He adds to, Frodo, which was last year's Hallmark Lord of the Rings ornament. I got a couple of new Harry Potter ones, which were really cheap. I just picked them up at, Target. I got Santa Spidey, which is actually a pretty cool one that I got at Walmart. He's got, a bag of toys over his shoulder, and he's wearing a Santa hat, and he's in the middle of swinging his way across the tree, which is just, it's a cool little ornament. And it costs, $5. But the great part of this year's tree, probably the best part of this year's tree, is Santa Yoda as the Tree Topper. This thing is just awesome. For years and years, I have struggled with what should be atop the Geek Tree, and I ended up finding like this little kind of like warp coil looking thing that I put on top of it. But this is just perfect. Santa Yoda is about 6 inches tall. He is wearing a Santa suit. He's got a sack of toys over his shoulder, and he's just. He could be a little bigger. I mean, a 12-inch Yoda probably would have been perfect for the top of the Geek Tree. But I'm not complaining, because he's pretty cool. And I snapped a picture of him, so you'll be able to check him out. And I snapped a couple of other pictures of the Geek Tree. So I'm going to see how well those turned out and add them to the page for this podcast. And that's about it for the Geek Tree. If you have a Geek Tree, I'd love to hear about it. I'm always interested to hear what other people are doing with their geekiness at Christmas time. So send them to me. I'd love photos or video or whatever you got. Or tape the sound of your tree powering up and send that to me too. You can send it to me via email at nuketown@gmail.com.
So what do you need besides a miracle?
Guns. Lots of guns.
So while we're on a kind of holiday kick here, I wanted to talk about some possible gift ideas for those of you who may have gamer geeks in your life, or, who are gamer geeks who are trying to figure out what they want for Christmas. Yeah, I know this is a week before Christmas, but you know what? I'd really hope to get it up earlier, and you still have, when you guys get this, 6 shopping days left? And some of this stuff is actually pretty easy to get, so anyway. The first thing that I wanted to suggest was a USB flash drive. Specifically, one of the little keychain flash drives. Quite a few guys in my group have these, and they're pretty cool. Actually, they're cool for geeks all around. If you haven't considered getting one, I would recommend picking one up, because they're just really useful for moving information around. Anyway, the way that we use them in our group, the way the guys have been using it and the way I've started doing it, is storing character sheets, campaign information, blank character sheets, that kind of stuff. It's just really useful to have around. Like right now, I have a whole bunch of RPG files on my computer. A couple of them are electronic downloads that I bought, like some Greyhawk handbooks that I purchased through... I don't even know where I bought them. A couple of Malhavik Press things. Stuff that I don't necessarily have a lot of time to read. So I throw them on the USB key. Now, wherever I am, I can just kind of pop it into my laptop or whatever and read. It's also really useful, for files. If I'm working on some campaign stuff and, I didn't bring my computer home from work or whatever, throw them on the USB key. I've got them ready to go. The other cool thing that I did was I uploaded all of my campaign files to it. So now if I'm at a friend's house, as is often the case, and I'm away from my computer and I don't have ready access to some of this stuff, boom, I can just go right in and look for my adventure notes from 2004, whatever. There's a couple different variations of them, and I'm going to have links to all this stuff in the show notes. Most of the links go to Amazon, but occasionally I'll link to directly to a specific site. But anyway, there's a couple different options. There's the 1 gig, the 512 megabyte, and the 256 megabyte. I mean, 1 gig's awesome if you can afford it. I think they generally run like $80 or something like that. But even the 256 or 512, if all you're using them for is like character sheets, maybe a copy of your character files for PC Gen or whatever, even the smaller ones are still really useful. The next thing, which kind of goes hand in hand with the USB drive, is a subscription to d20srd.org, or the hypertext d20srd, which actually I reviewed in the last edition of Radioactive. The cool thing that I forgot to mention on that podcast was that you can, if you subscribe to the site, you can actually get a copy of the SRD in offline format. So it's the entire Hypertext D20 SRD in a downloadable format. You can just throw it on the USB drive, and boom, instant, easily accessible, easily readable, easily browsable version of the SRD. And frankly, things happen. In my game, we usually have wireless access, and we usually have a couple people with laptops, but sometimes you don't have that wireless. It would be great to just have this easily available on a keychain. And I personally, as I said in the review, I think the D20 SRD is just awesome for being able to quickly look things up. For me, it's easier than using the player's handbook to do it. So I think subscriptions run you, let's see, I'll click through on my little link here. It's $15 a year. Well worth it, guys. You also get, I think with that, you get 4 updates a year to the SRD, the offline SRD. So, you know, if you're looking to surprise a geek friend, if you're just looking for something really useful to have, I definitely recommend doing that. Another possibility, gift certificate to RPG Now. Actually, DriveThruRPG, I think, is where I have my link to. I think you could look around on RPG Now. They might have gift certificates too, but I'm specifically mentioning DriveThruRPG because they did have gift certificates. And that's pretty cool because they have a lot of out-of-print stuff. They have, if I remember correctly, I hope I'm not confusing the two, but anyway, they've got all kinds of stuff there that's just really useful for a gamer to have. And again, more stuff to put on that spiffy new USB flash drive, right? Now, two things that are kind of different that I would recommend adding to your list. Mutants and Mastermind, second edition from Green Ronin, which is a superheroes role-playing game. It's based on the D20 system, but even folks who don't like D20 might want to check it out because they do away with things like classes. They use a point-buy system for you to build your heroes, and they get rid of things like hit points, which I know drives non-D20 people nuts. It's got that D20 kind of pulpy mechanic to it, you know, that kind of heroic mechanic, the idea being that, your characters are heroes who are going to succeed. But it's also different enough that it's not the same old D&D. I just picked up the book, I guess, last month, and I've been reading through it, and I'm really enjoying it, so I can wholeheartedly recommend that, especially if you got a lot of your gamer friends are into comic books. The other cool book that I think is, if you're looking for something different for your campaign, or, just want to try something else out, check out Malhavik Press's Iron Heroes. I don't have this book yet. It's actually on my wish list. But basically, it's another one of Monty's... he didn't write it. Somebody else did. But it's another of Monty Cook's company's alternative player handbooks, kind of like Arcana Evolved. Only the idea here is a very Conan-esque, Robert E. Howard combat-heavy version of D20. See, isn't, D20 combat heavy enough? Well, this kind of strips out all the magic, strips out all the healing, and puts all, it gives you all these extra feats and such to make really cinematic, really kind of over-the-top combat, which I picked up the book and was just kind of browsing through it at Barnes & Noble, and I thought, wow, this is a really cool book. I wish I could justify buying it right now. Again, great thing to add to your Christmas list. Now, the other thing, it's kind of been on my wish list for a while, I guess for the last year, because that's about how long it's been out for. It came out earlier in 2005, if I remember correctly, but it's GURPS 4th edition. There's two books, the Player Handbook, the Campaign book, which I guess is their DM book. GURPS is something I've kind of been interested in on and off for a couple of years. I've never actually played it. It's definitely something I've wanted to add to my collection just as a kind of a completist. It's one of those signature games that's out there that, a lot of people talk about, but I've never really played. So I wanted to pick it up. Now there's two other things that I thought, would be of interest to gamers. The first is the D&D soundtrack by Midnight Syndicate. No, this isn't the D&D movie. This is a soundtrack that they created under license from Wizards of the Coast. Very cool soundtrack. I'm hoping to probably do a review of it sometime soon, maybe in early January. Good kind of heroic. Again, so it reminds me of the sound that you get from like the Conan soundtrack. If you're looking to diversify your listening, the music that you play during a campaign session, I definitely recommend picking it up. I mean, it should be a staple in your collection. The other one, I don't know if that's going to appeal to everyone. I think if you're running a more heroic campaign, it's definitely worthwhile. This would be Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe soundtrack. It's definite. It's not like your Lord of the Rings soundtracks here, folks. Lord of the Rings were great, but they have a tendency to be, I don't want to say larger than life, but they're really big. They're a huge, rich sounding, and they kind of go all over the place. They go from really heroic to really dangerous to scary. It's just, they're great soundtracks. Chronicles of Narnia doesn't have that much range. It's much more of a, well, it fits what it is, you know? I mean, Narnia is a children's book, so, you know, it fits that. But you still have, you know, it's still, it's a great listen. I've been listening to it at work for the last week, and, you know, it's uplifting, it's enjoyable. If you're worried about the religious thing, really, you know, it's mostly instrumentals. There's a couple of songs at the end, but, you know, they're not getting that out of it. And it doesn't sound churchy or anything like that. It's just kind of good, upbeat, heroic instrumentals. So again, if that fills a niche in your campaign, you know, especially if you're running kind of a good campaign, you know, a stridently good campaign, I would definitely recommend checking out the Chronicles of Narnia soundtrack. And that's another one actually that I'm looking to hope to review. So that would be the Geek Gift Guide for 2005. And that'll about wrap it up for this particular podcast, too. Let's see. I've got a couple of things lined up, and I'm trying to nail down. I mentioned that I want to do a review of the Chronicles of Narnia soundtrack. I have the soundtrack on hand. I'm just trying to get permission from the publicist. I also have the King Kong soundtrack, which is another cool one, which would definitely could be useful from a gaming standpoint, or just from a, you know, kind of like a geeky sci-fi standpoint. I really enjoyed listening to it. And I'm looking at doing a book review of Rendezvous with Rama and perhaps Dark Tower 7. I got the book for either my birthday or Christmas last year, and I never got around to reading it. So one of my goals for Christmas break is to finally finish that book. But that'll be about it for now. If you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can Skype me at the username Nuketown. I'm usually online during the days. I try and remember to fire up my Skype from time to time. You can also check out the forums at nuketown.com/forum or tsfpn.com, and there'll be links to both of those in the show notes. And that's it for now, folks. If I don't talk to you before the end of the year, have a happy new year, and well, I'll be talking to you later.